This is Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Today, we begin just blocks from Venice Beach, a flashpoint in LA's homelessness crisis. But here, on a quiet part of Rose Avenue, lined with single-family homes, right next to the south side of the Penmar Golf Course, there isn't a tent in sight. Now, there used to be, don't get me wrong, this time last year, a large homeless encampment with nearly 100 tents stood here, lined up on a jogging path alongside the golf course. But over a few weeks last fall, the city helped move most of the unhoused people who lived here into motels. And then they blocked off the trail for maintenance. A chain-link fence still surrounds it. L.A. City Councilmember Mike Bonin, who represents Venice, told a TV reporter at the time that the effort was a model for quickly and humanely breaking up big homeless encampments.
When we can house 70 people within 3 weeks, I consider that a tremendous win. And I hope it's the kind of progress we can replicate and move on throughout the city.
Well, now Bonin is fast-tracking a similar plan to clear hundreds of tents from Venice Beach. The effort's scheduled to officially start Monday on Oceanfront Walk and unfold over the next 6 weeks. It's been accelerated, partly, by L.A. County Sheriff Alex Villanueva's vow to clear the area himself by July 4th. So it's a good time to ask. 8 months after city officials moved out the Penmar Golf Course camp, where did the unhoused people who live there wind up? Was it really a success? And what do the answers tell us about the possible future of the beach and Venice itself? KCRW reporter Anna Scott went to find out.
At first, nobody could tell me where the dozens of people who lived by Penmar Golf Course are now. About 70 of them moved into motels last fall temporarily. Where did they go from there? Nobody, not City Council Member Mike Bonin, the nonprofit that worked with him at Penmar, or the LA Homeless Services Authority, could say.
E is up there. He's from the golf course.
Here's someone who does have an answer. Georgianne Ayers. She was one of the people who camped by the golf course. Now she lives on a mostly commercial block just a half mile away near Gold's Gym.
Terry's down there.
Ayers says this is where many of the people from Penmar ended up, back on the street.
Yeah, a lot of us. A lot of them are down the beach, too. There's quite a few down the beach.
Another unhoused man who stays nearby, Douglas Lewis, says Ayers is right. Lots of people who live around here used to camp at Penmar.
Not just this street either. You know what I mean? All over Venice right now. All over Venice.
Lewis says he bounced from the Penmar encampment to a motel, then back outside. The motel he stayed at was part of a program called Project Room Key, which placed unhoused people in rooms to protect them from COVID-19. It's currently winding down. Project Room Key was meant to provide a springboard to permanent housing. But for Lewis, he says he had to leave after violating curfew.
They just kicked me out. No, that was actually the second one. I had one before that, you know what I mean, because I was late getting my stuff in. But, you know, I should have had three opportunities, they told me. That's what I was told. And I only got two.
Lewis says that the transition from living by the golf course to the structure of Project Room Key was tough, and more so because it felt haphazard. Alexis Norfliss agrees. She sleeps at the Venice Bridge Home Shelter now, but was in Project Room Key too, and says she would have liked better communication in advance about the rules and what to expect.
That's how a lot of us ended up back out here, though. It takes, like, I heard 60 to 70 days to make or break a habit. Like, you can't just expect us from going from the curb to even a hotel room and being used to, like, having to be in at 6 a.m. We don't have none of those problems here. They're sending us around in a big-ass circle.
Councilmember Bonin says that Norfliss, Lewis, and Ayers are right, that a lot of people from Penmar ended up back outside. And he says he's learned from that.
Yeah, I think some of that is true, and I think that's why we've designed the Venice Beach Encampment to Home program the way that we did. In some ways, the program is similar, and in some ways it is very much the opposite.
The big difference, he says, is that the new plan for the beach comes with permanent housing set aside from the start.
What the city has traditionally done with a lot of its programs is to offer people a motel voucher with the hope that something else was coming later.
But something else doesn't always come, and that's not unique to Venice. This time, the plan is once again to move people from tents to temporary motel rooms. But from there, Bonin says he has enough permanent housing secured for all of the roughly 200 people camped by the beach. Some actual apartments, plus a variety of different kinds of rental vouchers. The same social services nonprofit that led the effort to move people from Penmar, St. Joseph's Center, is also working on the beach effort. The organization's president and CEO, Valicia Adams-Kellum, says they'll apply lessons learned.
You know, it's really hard without having a through line to permanent housing. Penmar was just like a really rushed project. We were not able to fully, line up the permanent housing resources. And that's a key component of this effort.
But some of Bonin's constituents have lost patience. One group has started a recall campaign, partly over homelessness. During a recent hearing at City Hall discussing the plan to house people at the beach, Jessica Rogers of the Pacific Palisades Residents Association expressed frustration towards Bonin.
Every program that he's created, they're right back on the streets. It's ineffective. It's wasting money. It's destroying lives and neighborhoods. Let's save Los Angeles, please. Thank you.
I asked Bonin what he'd say to critics who have lost faith in him.
Some people may say, well, look at Penmar. You said it was a success, but now a lot of these people are back on the streets. This crisis has ballooned under your watch. The boardwalk is another example of that. Why should we trust you?
What I'd say to those who are saying, we don't support this, don't do this, what the hell is the alternative? With a crisis this big, you have to keep trying. You have to keep using different resources when they become available. We have more tools than we had a year ago. You got to try using it.
Back on a side street off Rose Avenue, former Penmar camper Douglas Lewis says he and his wife are still looking for an apartment.
We need housing, and we want it. I've been out here since 2003. Yeah, tell me about it. A lot of it at first was my own choice, but, after that, it's been kind of hard getting back up.
But he's working on it. For KCRW, I'm Anna Scott.
An update now to this story. 9 days after KCRW requested the information, the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority just today sent us some numbers on where people from the Penmar encampment wound up. 14 people from the encampment have been matched to permanent housing, according to the agency. That word matched, by the way, means a countywide computer system identified some type of apartment voucher or other assistance to them. The Homeless Services Authority did not immediately respond, though, to an email asking how many of those matched have actually moved in. Coming up on the program, a tool that could help fight fires, and the inventors are teenagers.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
I'm back with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. California's drought is adding fuel to what could become a terrible wildfire season. That is something that was top of mind for students at the Archer School for Girls here in Los Angeles. A team of 42 students have been putting their heads together for 2 years to find a solution to a real-world problem like wildfire safety and prevention. So they invented something called Hydra. It's an automated sprinkler system that uses infrared technology to detect embers, like flying embers, in a wildfire. And now they've won the Lemelson MIT Invent Teams grant of $10,000 for that invention of Hydra. Mike Carter is the engineering and design coordinator over at the Archer School, and Karen Garcia is a junior there on the team that invented it, and she's the computer-aided design lead. Mike and Karen, welcome to you both.
Great to be with you, Steve.
Thank you.
Hey, Karen, first off, congratulations to you and your teammates. How does Hydra work?
Yes. Here at the Archer School for Girls, we are on Invent Team, and we developed Hydra, an automatic sprinkler system that uses infrared cameras, as you mentioned, to detect and extinguish approaching embers and also any resulting hotspots that are there. So our sensor-targeted system will conserve water for firefighters by only turning on when necessary, which will then aim directly at embers and hotspots and also utilize water from different sources like a tank or pool when available. How our device works, Hydra, is that it essentially uses infrared cameras to detect an ember and will move the device 180 degrees horizontally or 180 degrees vertically to then pinpoint that ember and use its nozzles and water source supply to then extinguish the ember.
Why the name? I mean, I guess Hydra, you think of water. It's the Greek mythological character, the water monster, Hydra. Why did you use that name? And where did you come up with this idea for this sprinkler system?
When you think of Hydra, you automatically think of water, which is what our device happens to do. It extinguishes embers using water. So when thinking about our design criteria, we really tried to prioritize Hydra's movement and using water in an efficient way, and while also integrating the electronic, mechanical, and design systems. So we based our design off of a strobe light, which is just a light that moves 180 degrees vertically and horizontally. And using this system, the arms of the strobe light would hold onto one primary nozzle and this nozzle would be the one that would target specifically the embers. We also have four nozzles on the outside that just these stationary nozzles allow for Hydra to extinguish any embers that surround Hydra and also provide a second level of protection for the embers that are not extinguished from the targeted nozzle. So going back to the question of how we created this name for Hydra, we also had in mind the design of Hydra and wanted a name to describe what Hydra is, not only how it functions, how it looks, but also its main message and design criteria.
Hey, Mike, were you guys affected by wildfires? Is that something that, I hate to use a pun, but sparked your interest in all of this?
Yes, actually, it's been a two-year process where originally a team of students came together to find a meaningful problem in the community. And we surveyed our community, and the school had actually had to close due to wildfire twice in the previous 2 years, including a four-day closure because of the Getty Fire. And so many of their fellow students had to evacuate during recent wildfires. And so it was very relevant to them. And that led their exploration of what could be a way of addressing the problem. And actually an NPR story that cited research showing that most homes that are set on fire due to brushland fires are really not from the fire front, but from embers that can fly several miles ahead of it.
Karen, you're a junior. You've spent a lot of time in high school working on this project, as Mike says. Did you pick up any skills or learn something new that you're taking away from this whole experience?
Yes, of course. I came and joined Invent Team pretty much knowing nothing about engineering or knowing a bit. And I was inexperienced at first. I was mostly known for doing science fair, and I was really involved in that area of science, but not necessarily with Invent Team and inventing. When I joined, as I mentioned, I knew nothing, so I had to start from scratch. And I was working on the computer-aided design committee, where we are using an a software, Fusion 360, to make 3D models of our design. I had to basically learn on my own, and with the help of Mr. Carter, we were working together and with other members as well to figure out, or for me to figure out, how to use this program and software. And after coming out and leading so many students with using Fusion 360, I learned how not only how to use the software, but also how to lead in an efficient way. I was also the budget head and the budget lead for managing the money with Mr. Carter from the Lemelson MIT program and grant. So one thing I also learned from that experience was how to manage money in a way that is efficient and also in a way that accomplishes the goals of our team. And in the end, managing both of these committees has been truly rewarding, and I'm infinitely grateful to have the opportunity to serve as a leader for other students, especially when motivation was low sometimes during quarantine, working with others and working with others who are younger than me as well has been rewarding, because online they came with their smiles, ready to learn and experiment. So I think leading in general has taught me to think more critically, creatively, and made me a better leader to move on or just continue throughout this journey.
Well, Mike, what happens now with the grant money and the prototype?
So the Lemelson MIT Invent Teams program is, for us, a really a multi-year process where we find the problem, get the grant, develop that first prototype. And now the students are working on a provisional patent, and they have already made connections with the Los Angeles Fire Department to try to do some actual real world testing with it coming up in the next year as they continue to refine their design and to really work on that tracking software. The Ember tracking group, much like Karen and the CAD group, you know, these are very advanced skills that most students, you know, aren't expected to have even in college, let alone high school. And so our student leaders were really learning just ahead of their committees, you know, just a week ahead or 2 weeks ahead, and then really teaching these younger students who would then all jump in with just enough knowledge to work on their area, and then just enough to work together to share so that all of the committee projects were in sync. And that what the motion tracking group did worked with what the app group did, that had then the right connections to the solenoids and the servo motors that the engineering group was working with, that then Karen's budget group would have to order, and then her CAD group would have to design a housing to fit everything. It was really an amazing integrated project, and there is still so much more growth that I see for our students in the next year as they really try to bring this to fruition as a patented and licensable design.
It's such a cool story, and I want to thank you both for coming on and talking about it. Mike Carter, the engineering and design coordinator of the Archer School for Girls. Karen Garcia, a student there, part of the team that just won that big Lemelson MIT Invent Teams grant. Mike and Karen, thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Moving along now with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiatakis, literally moving along because maybe you found refuge in the woods through the pandemic. A stroll, perhaps, through your neighborhood park, or maybe a hike into your local national forest. But who maintains those trails? Typically, volunteers go out nearly every weekend to remove down trees and stabilize banks so the path doesn't erode. And they're there to help.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy. Oh, baby, have it back. All I need is my mother. Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Ben White heads up San Gabriel Mountains Trail Builders. It's a volunteer group based out of Azusa. His is one of many teams getting back out there after COVID restrictions and looking for other folks to lend a hand as well. Ben, welcome to you.
Great to be here.
So tell us some of the areas and trails that your group works on.
We primarily work in two drainages here in the Angeles National Forest, San Gabriel Mountains National Monument, the San Gabriel River drainage and the San Antonio River drainage. In the San Gabriel River area, we work on in the lower elevations on the lower Bear Creek. Further up, midway going to Crystal Lake, we work on the Smith Mountain Bear Creek Trail, which goes over into the San Gabriel Wilderness. And up in the Crystal Lake area, we work on, there's a number of nature trails there that we work on every year in the summertime.
How long have you been doing this?
I started out as a very young man at my father's knee. It's been 32 years.
32 years. What keeps you going back?
That's a very good question. A lot of people ask that. It's very satisfying work to me. I'm a carpenter by trade, and I like building things and seeing the product of my work, and trail work is definitely that. But it's also the companionship, comradeship, planning things. It's the working with people. It's just, to me, it's a lot of fun, and the out of doors too. I call it a mini vacation. You know, my head can be all a jumble before I start out in the morning and start working on the trails. And by the time I come back, it's like I've been to Hawaii for 2 weeks. It's just so, to me, it's very relaxing. It's hard work, but it's very relaxing.
I know COVID probably postponed a lot of your projects, your trail projects. What's the one that you're most proud of over the course of some years?
One, it's a project rather than, you know, it connected two ends of a trail. This is up on the East Fork of the San Gabriel River. It's called the Laurel Gulch Bridge. This was 2 miles from the trailhead at East Fork. And this was a bridge, a wooden bridge, which we assembled and got ready for a helicopter to bring it up to the gulch. And this was all volunteers. We poured footings, disassembled and assembled the bridge, and got that all together. And this is 2 miles away from any road, and we were only off by an eighth of an inch on one of the brackets for the bridge, so I claim that as our biggest win so far. Other things don't have to be that close, but this had to. So that to me was, talk about satisfaction. I was so glad to hear that.
And going forward, now that things are starting, fingers crossed, starting to open up a little bit, I suspect you need some help, right? You need other folks to volunteer to do what you're doing and to sort of, you know, you're I don't want to say passing the baton, but you're trying to get other people to do that important work.
Absolutely. There's some areas that are closed because of the Bobcat fire or other fires too. And so we haven't been allowed in to work on those yet, but I'm sure at some point we will. But the other work goes on. There's lots of work at Crystal Lake and the lower Bear Creek that needs work too. So there's always areas that need work associated with the forest or with the National Monument.
Well, I want to thank you for all that you do. And continue the great work and cleaning up those trails, so many trails that we hike through and enjoy nature with. Ben White, who heads up the San Gabriel Mountain Trail Builders, a volunteer group based out of Azusa. Ben, thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Good talking to you. Hope to see you out on the trail.
Maybe not the trail, although hiking is really nice here in greater LA, but how about the LA River? I took a trip down the LA River last weekend, and I can't wait to share that experience with you tomorrow. You know, summer's here, and the living's a little different this year because of COVID easing. Fingers crossed. What are some of the things that you can do, you can embark on to enjoy the longer, warmer days right here in Southern California? Check us out tomorrow on Greater LA. That's it for today. If you miss a story, want to share your comments with us, maybe have a story idea, check us out online at kcrw.com/greaterLA.